Welcome back, WNSG, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Yes, we're back at Fadley's. Must be summertime. We're picking crabs around here, and it must be Catonsville time. It's the High Holy Holidays.
High Holy Holidays.
Out on the west side. We're going to give some love to State Fair. We're going to give some love to Jennings. We're going to have some watermelons, crushes, right? We're going to have some hot dogs, hamburgers, crab. Before we do that, though, we got to talk some politics down here at Fadley's and get into the summer season. Matthew Gallagher's here, and let's see, part running the city, part running the state, now running Goldsecker, correct?
That's right.
There it is, man. What's going on?
It's great to be here. Especially at Fadley's, my favorite place to have a crab cake in Baltimore.
So you've been here before, man.
A few times.
We bring them here early to get the smell going, and then we serve the crab.
It's intoxicating.
So for where we are in the city, in the state, with tanks rolling around on the 4th of July.
There will be no tanks, by the way, in the Catonsville.
Not in Catonsville.
I remember when Martin rode in on the white horse, and I thought that was a little funky, but it didn't have anything to do with policy, right?
It was a nod to history.
It was a nod to history, not an ode to North Korea.
No.
Just some thoughts about where we are and where your mind is as the FBI is pulling this mayor's files out of houses. And, you know, we've got all the city issues that we had with the mayor here 2 weeks ago. You watched this. You slept through this. You were awakened in the middle of the night by city issues and state issues. And, you know, I love nothing more than when policymakers are actually here.
Well, look, I mean, we have to be very honest. It's a very challenging time in Baltimore City right now. We've had some real problems with leadership and management and executive judgment. And, you know, there's a lot of great things that are happening in Baltimore City. Hats off to both of you for everything you're doing to try to bring attention to the positives, to accentuate the good things that are going on here. But there's a pretty robust conversation around leadership in this city right now. We got to figure out what we're going to do going forward, and we need some pretty significant change.
Don, go ahead, man.
I was going to say, you know, Matt, it's interesting you talk about the positives. As I stopped in the parking garage today, I was on the fourth floor, and as I went to the elevator, I went right to the ledge, and I thought, this is amazing. I looked to the left, and I see the University of Maryland. I looked to the right, I see Hopkins. I look down further left, and I see the Broma Seltzer Tower, and I look straight down the road, and I see M&T. And I thought, you know, just don't tell me. And then I walk right down to this historic market, you know, opened in 1782. We keep telling folks, 6 years after the Revolution, this market opened. You got incredible Fadley's. It will be packed in just a little while with both locals and tourists. There are so many resources in this city, so many assets. You're a part of that. What's the key? I mean, I always joke. Nestor said, he always said, give me the skinny on Matt before he gets in. And I said, well, I would call him, he's sort of the Elizabeth Warren of Maryland politics, in that he's the politics.
I take that as a compliment.
Right? You'll take it as a compliment.
I will not call you Pocahontas.
No, thank you. I appreciate that. I've been called worse.
You are the policy guy. I mean, whenever anybody's talking about, you want real solutions, because they're very often, they're not bumper stickers. They're complex issues.
Yeah.
I wonder why the same homeless man's been living on my corner for 16 and a half years. I mean, literally, he has lived on the corner for 16 and a half years. No one wants him there. No one, I mean, it's not helping my... He's lived there for... What is the policy of allowing this for 16 years, literally?
All right, there's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah, go ahead.
That's what I said.
Let me give it a shot. Let me give it a shot. Look, it's a great city. It's a historical city. We've got tremendous assets. You know, Don, you invoked all the anchor institutions that are in town. You see what's going on with the redevelopment of Lexington Market right now, Cross Street Market, Broadway Market. There's efforts around Hollins Market. There's some really fantastic things that are going on here. We've got some very, very strong headwinds in terms of the public safety challenges. We've got some strong headwinds in terms of the quality of public schools. And we need a breakout strategy. We need to make very tangible progress in a lot of areas. You know, 10, 12, 15 years ago, it was about public safety, and that galvanized everybody in the city. You know, you have to live somewhere that is safe if you want people to live here, work here, play here. And now it's not just one solution to one issue. You got a lot of very interdependent issues. You got to make progress on public safety. You got to make progress on education. But then you've also got issues with health and transportation and jobs. And you really need a series of kind of interconnected strategies that are working together, that are meeting people where they are, so you can make progress. And look, the reality of Baltimore City is, you know, the tax base here, you've got property taxes and you've got income taxes. A third of the city's property is in the hands of nonprofits, so that puts a disproportionate burden on the income tax. And in Baltimore City, if on a per capita basis, you know, per person income levels are much lower than the surrounding counties, you don't have as much of a tax base to bring together to be able to pay for whether it's amenities, whether it's core services, whatever the vision of the city is. It's very, very hard to self-finance our way out of a lot of those problems. That's why we got to work very closely with the state. That's why you got to get philanthropy and the business community together and get everybody pulling in the same direction.
Where do the state and the federals come in on this? Because I always hear the darkness of another unrest would bring the federales in. The state's going to. I hear all of this gloom and doom, and I think, well, you know, what happened here 4 years ago wasn't good. And I currently, you know, with the government being where. I don't see any help coming from there, and certainly what happened with public transportation from what's happening in Annapolis, it feels like we don't have a friend there. I mean, that's for Larry to speak to, but I live here. Yep. It's important that Larry cares about me. I'm a taxpayer here, you know?
Yep, we're all taxpayers. Everybody's got a vested interest in seeing Baltimore be successful. And when you travel the country, my guess is that when people ask you where you're from, you say you're from Baltimore. You know,
and
you don't say you're from Dundalk or Catonsville.
That used to mean Fadley's Crab Cakes and Cal Ripken and what a nice harbor you have. And I took my family down to our Red Sox. I mean, that 20 years ago, that's what it meant.
But then the extension of Matt's question, Nestor, for you, because you bring it up almost every week, is you do say you're from Baltimore. I say I'm from Baltimore. And then you say almost the immediate reaction is, oh, man.
I'm surprised you're alive.
That's all they can think of. And it's really sad because you mentioned these anchor institutions. We didn't even get into the arts and cultural with the Hippodrome, the BMA.
The Hamilton's playing. Hamilton's playing for the next 3 weeks. Right.
These great things happening in the city, and we sort of get stuck in what I'll call this inferiority complex. How big a loss, Matt, was the Red Line?
It was huge. I mean, anytime you're going to get $3 billion worth of investment in your city and you're going to be able to move very significant portions of the population towards job centers, it's an enormous loss. And, you know, it wasn't really replaced. There's been some lip service paid to bus enhancements, but there is no substitute for the Red Line. It was a setback that's going to probably take at least a decade to recover from. And a lot of people had pulled together and united behind that vision to bring this really transformative project here to Baltimore. And it was a crushing blow to lose the Red Line. There's no two ways about it.
I mean, despite all of its, people are often critical of the DC Metro, but despite all of its flaws, 2 weeks ago, my wife and I went down to visit a friend in DC. We literally went to her house, got on the Metro, went all around D.C. that day and never needed an automobile. And we're able to get wherever we needed to be.
Well, I mean, I travel the world, right? So I'm looking at a Tokyo trip in December because U2's playing over there. And I've been there before. I checked the lines. Just to look where they're playing and looked it up. And I thought, oh, we'll take the line. I'm in New York 2 weeks ago. And when I'm in New York and I go down into those holes, I think to myself, the courage and the vision that the men responsible, because it was all men then 100 years ago, to invest the money, to say to the people, the Johnny O's say to their tax base, hey, we need you to pitch in more so we can have this great thing for our children and our grandchildren. That is what that vision is. I mean, Barbara Mikulski talking about the tunnel, and I still see 83 deadlocked down at President Street.
Yep.
I still see 95 coming in on the other side. And I think to myself, if I'm the mayor, if you're the mayor, we're going to have to go fight with the people in Federal Hill about building a dig under the city. They built a dig under Boston, right? So we need to make it all better. But transportation for people, I don't think people in White Marsh really understand what's going on in West Baltimore where you can't buy a grocery. And if you get a job in White Marsh, it sounds like, oh, I got a job in White Marsh. We just go get in our car, we go to White Marsh, right? That's not the way it works for a lot of citizens in the city.
Yeah. Look, I mean, you go to a major city, usually public transportation is your first option. It's not your last option. And when you're in a city like Baltimore, where it's basically 80 square miles, you ought to be able to get from one corner of the city to the other corner of the city in two or three different ways in a reasonable amount of time. And unfortunately, we don't have those options. And that has a cascading impact.
Can you tell me on a historical, like, has it just always been kicked down the curb, literally?
Well, look. Right now, you never have the investments in terms of the infrastructure. You've got a light rail line. You've got one subway line. There's not a great level of connectedness.
Right.
You know, it was, I guess, 2013. You know, the decision was made at the state level to make a very significant investment in transportation, you know, to raise the gas tax after it hadn't been touched in 20 years. The hope was the red line was going to come to Baltimore. The purple line was going to come to Montgomery County and Prince George's County. And one of those projects came through and the other one didn't. And right now, you've got a situation where the state is responsible for really making the mass transit decisions in Baltimore, whether it's buses, whether it's a light rail, whether it's a subway line, but there's not really local control of that decision making. So the people who live in Baltimore City and Baltimore County really don't feel personally invested in those decisions. They don't have accountability over those types of decisions. And you can have influence on that every 4 years when you pick a governor and when you pick your delegates and your senators. But these types of projects are measured in increments of decades. So it's really, really hard to get things turned around. I think that's why in Baltimore City right now, you see some very focused efforts to try to improve the bus routes, to try to improve the on-time, the availability of the buses. And you're also seeing a lot of investment going on in bike lanes. I know they frustrate some people, but it's cheap, it's affordable, has incredible public health value. And, you know, you slap down some, you know, paint on the road and suddenly you got a bike infrastructure and network. That's something that millennials and young professionals, whether they live in Canton or Remington or Johnson Square or Oliver, they can get downtown, they can get cross town, and it's affordable. You know, those are the options that are available
to us right
now.
So I'm familiar with that. I don't know that we're going to become that anytime soon.
No, but we can aspire and we can do a lot better. And honestly, we've come a far way when it comes to bike infrastructure in the city. I mean, yeah, it's frustrating Maryland Avenue and it's frustrating what happened in Canton. But, you know, Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake made this a priority a couple of years ago. She invested in it. It's one of those things where it's a real legacy to her vision that we've been able to make some real strides and gains in that area. You know, for every two steps forward, we take a step back with a lawsuit or kind of the infighting around this type of stuff. But I think we're heading in the right direction. I work right off of Maryland Avenue. It's unbelievable the volume of bikers I see coming into and out of the city every single day who are using that for their commute. And it's just, it's affordable. It's an option that as a city we can self-finance, that we can make the decisions ourselves, and hopefully it provides some level of baseline improvement that we can build on in terms of bus service and other mass transit options.
And you'll definitely have a healthier population with that. There's no doubt about that.
Well, it all goes together. And I would suggest that one of the challenges, Matt, is that in terms of mass transit, again, goes back to these decades-old stereotypes about the city, about the crime, about, quote-unquote, we hear it all the time, bringing it to the counties. So we've never had great support either in Anne Arundel or Baltimore for mass transit because people don't see it as affecting their daily lives. They don't see it interconnected, that the success of Baltimore and getting people to work in Baltimore somehow affects them.
Well, can I say something here, too? I grew up on buses. I mean, my father never drove. I mean, I took the 23 bus. The 23 bus was my only way, other than hopping a ride, to get anywhere. So if I came down to the arena for a hockey game or a blast game, if I went to Memorial Stadium, it was 23 to 22, 23 to 10. You could take 23 up Saratoga and you could walk six blocks. I mean, when I got my job at the News American, I took the number 10 bus. And then my wife, we became a one-car family. So I wound up taking the subway the day it opened. My parents brought me down here Christmas time, 1981, we were kids, whenever it was. I had never taken it. Then we had a one-car family, and I was going out to training camp. I wound up taking the subway out to Owings Mills Town Center, where I get my hair cut, by the way. Thank you, Hammerness. And they have a lovely Baseball Hall of Fame that you bring
Negro
up.
Negro Baseball Hall of Fame. If people haven't been and you're a sports, get to Owings Mills.
Alan McCallum loves it.
And it's amazing.
He's on the board there as well. So public transportation, for me, it's something I used to do. But when I had to take the number 3 up to Bainesville to go to Towson to go to work, my wife was working up in Hunt Valley, the bus is real. And in the modern era, to be able to check a Google app knowing the bus is coming, man, when I was a kid, we just went down there and stood and waited around. But bus is not a bad way to go. Certainly not the best way from a, you know, from filthing up the pollution and what we're trying to do, but it has worked. Why aren't the buses better? Why is there not pressure on Larry to say, all right, I get $3 billion. All right, I get we're not going to do that, but why can't we get people from point A to point B here?
Well, I mean, I think that what's going to happen in the next couple of years is I think so many people are focused on this issue right now. So many people want safe, reliable, convenient service that they're going to say, look, why is this in, you know, exclusively in state control? What can we do to bring it under a mayor, a county executive who are ready to prioritize this? And then you get the local buy-in, you get the willingness of the local electorate to invest in that type of service, and you have that direct accountability to a mayor and to a county executive to say, you know, I care about on-time performance of the bus service. Right now, you know, do you hold your governor accountable for, you know, bus service in Baltimore City? I think that that's a pretty long chain of accountability.
I think a lot of people who take the bus probably don't know the governor's in charge of it. They probably do blame the city if you live in the city, right?
Look, when you're mayor, you have to accept responsibility for everything. You know, if it rains out, it's your fault, it's your responsibility. And that just comes with the territory. So you have to accept that. And if you're a mayor and you're going to get held responsible for public transportation, you should say, I want a larger role in the governance. I want to know where the money from my city's going. And I want to have some say.
Well, right now, we do have this little dust up. And it's more than a little dust up. But it's all connected where we have the General Assembly and the governor back and forth over whether he'll release funds directly needed in Baltimore City right now. We're talking about funds for the Hippodrome. We're talking
about... Who's withholding Metro funds right now? Well, $55 million?
Tech funds to help with Baltimore County Police. Some are Youth Works funds, funds for BCCC. I mean, what... Again, how do we break this gridlock? I mean, you've lived in both worlds, and now as part of the foundation world, you sort of have to navigate between in a bipartisan way. How do we get the governor and his Republican counterparts who seem to support holding back on this money? They point to an upcoming potential structural deficit of $900 and some million next year's budget. How do we break that gridlock and get these funds flowing to Baltimore so we can help the symphony, so we can help the police? How do we make that happen?
Well, part of it's what you're doing right now, bringing attention to these issues. Part of it is just being relentless in terms of the follow-up and the reporting on this type of stuff. You know, look, you had overwhelming bipartisan support in the General Assembly for the passage of the budget. While the General Assembly made some changes to the budget, it's actually smaller than the one that the governor proposed. And yeah, maybe they're not in total agreement on every element of it, but we're 2 months removed, 2+ months removed now from all of those decisions. Right. And it's really unfortunate that we don't have any certainty as to what's going to happen. I mean, you look at the BSO, you look at Youth Works, you look at that uncertainty, and that's impacting the number of kids who are going to have jobs this summer. It's impacting not just the 75 musicians of the BSO, and then the dozens of administrators, and then the ticket takers, and then the restaurants, and then the people who run the parking garages. It just, you know, spills out in so many different directions. And look, the governor's got the right, you know, under the law to make the decision whether or not to release those funds. But, you know, the sooner the better in terms of making a decision.
Well, why are you trying to help the state? The punitive nature of all of this, and you've worked in that's the part as a citizen that I have the hardest time understanding and getting a scope on, that why you would shoot your own family members. You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand that, like, that there's not a collective, especially when we've had the problems we've had as a city here over the last 2 decades.
I don't want to speculate on anybody's motivations. And look, I'm not saying I haven't worked in politics, but I really consider myself a government person, and I was much more of a behind-the-scenes, keep-the-trains-running-on-time, the policy person.
But how is that different than the politics? Because that is, well, look, they are intertwined.
If you're going to be responsible for the management of government, you're going to have to play politics. You're going to have to know the small-p politics and the interpersonal relationships. it's unfortunate. And I keep bringing it back to, what are the merits? What are the facts? What are the talking points? What's the analysis? And if you've got a situation where the budget is actually smaller than what it was proposed to be, if you got a situation where you have a lot of bipartisan support, you know, we need some certainty. Governor's got the right to hold that money back. People have the right to lobby and advocate for it. I just wish a decision would get made so that people can kind of move out and adjust what they're doing accordingly.
Well, the clock is ticking. I mean, it's kind of silly. We're now, as we record this, we're coming up on the 4th of July. We're talking about YouthWorks, a summer youth program. The young people have been out of school now.
Summer's half
over.
For
2 weeks. By the time something happens, we're going to be to August, and it's going to be too late. So, in effect, if we don't get moving quickly and prioritize this, we're going to have a bunch of kids out of work this summer. Yeah. Nestor, I know we're coming up on a break.
I want to reset. Matthew Gallagher here. He's going to be here a couple more segments. We're at Fadley's. We're going to be at the State Fair next month. We're also going to be at Jennings Cafe and Yomps down in Catonsville. Don's going to be held up there at some point with a red, white, and blue. Something. You know, Damien, everybody here at Fadley's, we have a beautiful
decoration. Look at this, huh?
Wow. Red, white, and blue. Huh? Look at that.
I mean, Fadley's is in the spirit.
This feels like a sparkler. We're down here at Fadley's in Lexington Market doing seafood, doing some political chat. We're doing Baltimore Positive. Matt Gallagher here. We're back for more from Fadley's in Lexington Market. Happy 4th to everyone. We are Baltimore Positive and WNST.net.